For example, suppose that the question of our inability really to sense various genuine terrors, in particular the terror of our own death, should become a burning question of the day, as occurs from time to time with certain questions in contemporary life, then, in all probability, everybody, ordinary mortals as well as those called learned, would offer a categorical solution which they would not doubt for a moment, and, spluttering at the mouth, would set about to prove that what in fact saves people from experiencing such terrors is just their own will. But if this is conceded, why does not this presumed will protect us from all the little fears that assail us at every step? In order to sense and understand what I am now saying with your whole being and not merely with that mind fornication of yours, which, to the misfortune of our descendants, has become the dominant inherency of contemporary people, picture to yourself the following. Tonight, after the lecture, you go home, undress, and get into bed. Just as you were pulling up the covers, a mouse jumps out from under the pillow and scuttles across your body and disappears into the folds of the blankets. Admit candidly, does not a shiver actually run through your whole body at the bare thought of such a thing? Is it not so? Now, please try to make an exception, and without the participation of any of the subjective emotionality that has become fixed in you, picture to yourself, with your thought alone, that such a thing might happen to you, and you will then be amazed that you would react in such a way. What is so frightening about this? It's just an ordinary house mouse, the most inoffensive of creatures. And so, I ask you, how can all that has been said be explained by that will which is presumed to be in every man? How is it possible to reconcile the fact that a man is terrified by a timid little mouse, the most frightened of all creatures, and by thousands of similar trifles which might never even occur, and yet experience no terror in the face of the inevitability of his own death? In any case, to explain such a flagrant contradiction by the action of the famous human will is impossible. When this contradiction is considered soberly, without any preconceptions, that is, without any of the ready-made notions of various so-called authorities, whose wiseacrings have taken hold of people on account of their naivete and herd instinct, not to mention the results arising in their mentation from an abnormal education, it becomes perfectly obvious that all these fears from which they're does not arise in a man an impulse, as we said, to hang himself, are expressly permitted by nature to the extent to which they are indispensable for the process of our ordinary existence. And indeed, without them, without all these, in the objective sense, flea bites, which appear to us as unprecedented terrors, we could not have any experiencings at all, whether of joy, sorrow, hope, disappointment, and so on, nor could we have all those cares, stimuli, strivings, or in general any of the impulses that constrain us to act, to attain something, and to strive towards some aim. It is just this totality of childish experiencings, as they might be called, arising and flowing automatically in the ordinary man, which, on the one hand, make up and sustain his life, and, on the other hand, leave him neither the possibility nor the time to see and feel reality. If the ordinary contemporary man were somehow to sense or to remember, if only in thought, that at a definite date, for instance, tomorrow, a week, or a month, or even a year or two hence, he would die, and die for certain. What would remain, one asks, of all that until then had filled up and constituted his life? Everything would lose its sense and significance for him. What would be the importance of the decoration he received yesterday for long service and which had so delighted him? Or that glance he just noticed, so full of promise, from the woman who had long been the object of his constant and unrewarded longing? Or the newspaper with his morning coffee, and that deferential greeting from his neighbor on the stairs, and the theater in the evening, and rest, and sleep, all his favorite things, what worth would they all have? Certainly, they would no longer have the significance which he had given them before. If a man knew that death would overtake him only in 5 or 10 years. In short, to look his own death in the face, the ordinary man cannot and must not do, for he would, so to say, get out of his depth. And in clear-cut form, the question would arise before him, why then should we live and toil and suffer? Precisely that such a question may not arise, great nature, having become convinced that in the common presence of most people there are no longer any factors for meritorious manifestations proper to these three centered beings, has providentially and wisely protected them by allowing the arising in their common presence of various consequences of those properties unbecoming to them, which, in the absence of proper actualization permit them not to perceive or sense reality. And great nature was constrained to adapt herself to such an abnormality in the objective sense, because owing to the conditions of ordinary life established by men themselves, the deterioration in quality of the radiations required of them for higher common cosmic purposes insistently demanded for the maintenance of equilibrium an adaptation in the number of arisings and in the duration of these lives. Thus, it is clear that life is given to men not for themselves, but for serving these higher cosmic purposes. And that is why great nature watches over this life, so that it may flow in a more or less tolerable form, and takes care that it should not prematurely cease. Do not we also, we men, feed, watch over, look after, and make the lives of our sheep and pigs as comfortable as possible? Do we do all this because we value their lives for the sake of their lives? No. We do all this in order to slaughter them one fine day and to obtain the meat we need with as much fat as possible. In the same way, nature takes all measures to ensure that we shall live without seeing the terror, not hang ourselves, but live long, and then, when we are required, she slaughters us. In the established conditions of the ordinary life of people, this has already become an immutable law of nature. There is in our life a certain very great purpose, and we must all serve this great common purpose. And in this lies the whole sense and predestination of our life. All people without exception are slaves of this greatness, and all are compelled willy-nilly to submit and to fulfill without condition or compromise what has been predestined for each of us by his transmitted heredity and his acquired being.